This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Carolyn Alston. Carolyn is the Executive Vice President and General Counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement, where she focuses on interagency acquisition policy, GSA schedules policy. In fact, there is no one, in my humble opinion, in federal government or outside federal government who knows more about the policy underpinnings, the actual operational issues and challenges, and workings of the GSA schedules program. Carolyn, great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Roger, and I appreciate those kind words.
Well, you know, Carolyn, since we work together at the Coalition, of course I'm going to say kind words about you. So for sake of full disclosure.
I'm expecting it.
Yeah, okay. Well, Carolyn, today we're going to just do a sort of overview of where current federal procurement policy is with a focus on GSA and interagency contracting. There's been a lot going on over the past year. I think it's a good time to sort of sum it up. But, to start our discussion, can you give me your take on, the current and near future acquisition policy environment, what's going on, what's been going on, where you think things are going, and just as a big picture?
Sure, Roger. I think that the current environment is a little unusual because of the budget, the downward pressures on the budget, and the uncertainty related to agency budgets. That uncertainty is leading to, I think, an unprecedented concentration and focus on cost reductions, cost and price reductions. And I think we're seeing it everywhere. We're seeing it in individual contract negotiations. And I think we're seeing it also in some of the policy initiatives coming out of government. And maybe one of the biggest signs of the focus on cost savings is in strategic sourcing initiatives.
Right. Well, let's talk about this a little bit more, peel back the onion a little bit. Mm-hmm. In terms of the cost focus, is it your view that we are seeing, because we hear this, that there are more low price, technically acceptable type competitions out there?
That's certainly what we're hearing from our members, and I think that there is a little concern on the part of the members on that focus, because as you focus on the low cost, technically acceptable, you're losing some of the innovations and the focus on best value that many of the current acquisition programs were structured to incorporate.
Right. And as we, the FAR, it's a continuum, right? Best value continuum. It goes from low price technically acceptable up to the cost technical trade-offs and a best value determination. And along that, you look at your requirement and try to figure out the best way to go.
That's right.
Fundamentally, you got to make a good business decision, right? Whether what contract type you use, or what evaluation criteria you use, and the concern would be that over time, just sort of a knee jerk reaction going to low cost, technically acceptable, could actually, not be in the long term best interest of the government.
Yeah, I think that's particularly true. When you look at acquisitions now, most of the dollars are in services that are harder to describe, and where agencies tend to look more for cross-cutting solutions and a lot of times turnkey solutions. And those are particularly difficult contracts to go with a low-cost, technically acceptable type of evaluation method. And well, most of the cases, we're looking for best value.
Well, you know what? In the coming weeks, I'm going to have Dan Gordon, the former administrator for the Office of Federal Procurement Policy, on the show, and we're going to talk, get really down and dirty on low-cost, technically acceptable versus best value. So we're looking forward to that show. You know, it will be this month. Haven't got him nailed down, but he has agreed to come back on, so that should be good. You know, with regard to, again, this focus on price or the budgetary pressures, where else is it manifesting itself? You know, I think another area that you know, like get your thoughts on is the information collection, data collection, and the role. And you talked about strategic sourcing. You know, first of all, why don't you, for the audience, talk about what the current, flavor of strategic sourcing looks like on behalf of the federal government and the role that data collection plays in it.
There have been five or six strategic sourcing initiatives that are government-wide. The GSA schedule has been used as a platform for, I think, all of those strategic sourcing initiatives. And the way the process usually goes is that you'll identify a GSA schedule that may support the initiative. The government will then structure a government-wide blanket purchase arrangement to negotiate so that there's, in effect, a down select of a limited number of contractors who can receive an award for BPA. The twist on it, or maybe the complication, is that most of the government-wide BPAs have been without a specific commitment to quantity or a specific commitment to which agencies will use it. So what happens is that you then have to have yet another third level of competition in order to arrive at a specific price. But the concept is that if you, the BPA will give the agency the opportunity to get a lower price than the GSA schedule.
Right, and in that context, a lot of these BPAs have additional data reporting requirements.
Absolutely. Additional data is one of the main things that the government is going after. I mean, in addition to the price, the government would like to get more information about what it is buying, the prices at which it's buying, to see so that they can use that information that's collected to have a more focused buying effort and enable them to better leverage their prices downward.
Well, it's interesting that what you said there was that they're basically asking for information that the government already has, for what they're buying and the price they're paying.
Yeah.
So why does the government seek that information from its contractors when it's already in their possession?
Well, that's a good question.
I'll tell you
what the government's answer is. I think that the government is asking for information that is already in its possession because the information that the government has, they haven't been able to collect it in a usable format. So in effect, what is happening is that the government is passing off the requirement to collect and package that information in a usable form to the contractor. And you see this in a number of different areas. I think on every one of the multiple award schedule government-wide strategic sourcing BPAs, there's the information collection. And even in some individual GSA schedules, there are additional information collections.
Right. And there are additional, I mean, not to just, you know, focus on GSA. Other entities have included these type of reporting requirements. Other government agencies have included these type of reporting requirements in their RFPs as well.
Absolutely. I think that the government is looking for this type of information in any number of acquisitions. I think the reason that it comes up so often in GSA schedules is because that is a government-wide platform. All agencies use it, and it becomes more or less like a centralized source for the government to turn to for the data collection.
So what does it mean for contractors, this data collection? Is it increased cost? Does it?
You know, contractors, most of the contractors are not information collection services. They are providing a product, or they're providing a service. Information is a byproduct. It is not their method of doing business. So that requires the contractor to create information collection tools, and it's costly.
Right. And there, I mean, I think we understand the government's need for information and data in a usable form. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, given, the legacy systems that are in place, it just doesn't, mm-hmm. get there. So they are asking for contractors. I understand that. It's working with the contractors to collect data that's consistent with with commercial practice, I think, is the key. They're going to make it more efficient and effective for everybody, because ultimately, right, the government pays for this data one way or the other, because it does increase costs.
Yeah, absolutely. It increases cost. And I think in some cases, contractors are concerned not only about the cost increase, but even liabilities for reporting information, so that they make sure that it's in the GSA world, current, accurate, and complete.
Oh, absolutely. So, well, it's, to be current, accurate, and complete right now, Carolyn, we have to take a break.
Okay.
When we return, we'll be talking more with Carolyn Austin, and we're talking about the current policy environment, contracting environment involving interagency contracting and GSA's programs. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
In the ever-changing national security and IT environments, L3 delivers innovative, cost-effective solutions. As a Fortune 200 company, L3 offers customers global end-to-end services and solutions for large-scale systems. No matter the challenge, L3 has the agility, technology, and innovation required for mission performance. From cybersecurity to next-generation IT, L3's passion for its customers' missions drives its commitment to excellence. L3. Agility, innovation, performance.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Carolyn Austin. Carolyn is the Executive Vice President and General Counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement, where she works with me and the rest of the staff. And Carolyn, when we took a break, we were talking a little bit about data collection in the context, mm-hmm. of strategic sourcing initiatives across government, but specifically, mm-hmm. through GSA. With regard to strategic sourcing, you made a point about what I guess would be the third level competition, right?
Yes.
You get awarded a GSA schedule and then you get a BPA for Federal Strategic Sourcing Initiative, BPA. Then you do, task order competitions under it. I mean, particularly for services. Are there concerns about that model, or are there, what are the benefits of that model? Can you talk a little bit about both?
Okay. I think there's a definite benefit to a blanket purchase agreement, because it allows an agency to definitize its requirements, and it allows an agency to communicate what specific quantities are, what locations are. All of these factors are used by a contractor in both creating a solution for the government and for pricing. So the BPA, I think, is definitely a benefit. However, the problem with the model is that where you're attempting to negotiate a government-wide BPA as compared to a agency BPA, is you still don't have the information that you need to specifically propose or price your agreement. So what happens with respect to the strategic sourcing BPAs is, because the specific information is still not available at the first level where you negotiate the BPA, then a third level of competition is required at the agency level where the particulars are known.
In those cases, it seems to me we're talking more services in terms of the requirements. You can correct me if I am wrong. It wouldn't be the first time that I've been wrong or that you've corrected me. Is there a difference between services and, say, commodities in terms of, structuring those government-wide BPAs?
Yeah. I think that there is a problem with both products and services if you don't, if you cannot communicate the specifics of your requirement. I think services are more difficult to describe than products, so that the problem becomes even greater with respect to a services contract. And in both products and services, having three levels of competition is just costly. It's costly to the government to have to go out two or three times and it's costly to contractors to have to propose two or three times.
Well, do you have an alternative approach?
Absolutely. I think that strategic sourcing by agencies directly off the multiple award schedule contract for their own requirement is the solution for that, because it takes away an unnecessary step.
So instead of, you know, a company or the, you know, and the government, frankly, it's both parties spending time, money negotiating the schedule contract, then you get a BPA that's generic in nature, and there's time and money from both sides spent on competing, communicating about that, and getting those awarded. And then ultimately, what you're saying is that the third level is where the specific requirement that's priced and competed amongst the BPA holders, right?
Right.
So
yes,
eliminating that middle step and going directly to the last step.
Yes, I think you can eliminate that middle step. And I think that GSA has a very powerful role to play in strategic sourcing under the model that I would advocate, where agencies would go directly to the schedule. I think GSA has a powerful role to play in establishing BPA best practices, BPA models, information about the specific commodities that they can communicate to the agencies to help them have a better buying experience.
What about defining your requirements better for that, you know, still doing the three levels, but defining your requirements better? Or do you have to do that? I mean, I guess, you know, depending on the commodity, right, you'd get, now we're getting really technical, Carolyn, but depending on the commodity, you get the BPAs in place, you're going to, by regulation, you're going to have to compete certain level orders regardless, right?
The regulations
under the new FAR, right?
The regulations under the new FAR require you to compete orders over $150,000. So there is a required level of competition anyway.
Right. That's the point. So then, you know, and essentially that actually works in any that's the way the schedules work. But if you were using a multiple award IDIQ contract as well as your strategic sourcing platform, let's say, and you wanted to award four contracts, you'd still would have to compete the orders, right?
Yes, you'd have to compete the orders. And, you know, to me, it's not a real competition unless you have some real requirements. You know, otherwise you're just doing pre-selects, and the agency, ultimately the agency is going to have to compete on its requirement. And the sooner the agency can do that, I think the better it is for the agency, because they're going to, it's just less cost in having their people pursue these individual competitions.
This is old school procurement, right?
Yeah,
is that what
we
call it?
It's
old school. Like, we want requirements, actual requirements at a task order level, have a competition for that, right? And so how do you envision, you know, the agencies in their strategic sourcing model? Would they report their results to OMB based on this?
Yeah, and I think this is where the information collection comes in. Agencies can report their results to OFPP. They could report their results to GSA. I think the goal is to have agencies reporting it to some central location.
With that information, they'd be better informed when they went out and did their own BPAs or their own orders off contracts?
I think they'd be better informed on their own BPAs, but other agencies could share that experience with other agencies as best practices to other agencies when they're going out. And the prices would be, if they're reporting prices to OMB or central authority, those prices would also be visible. The only thing about price is that the situation changes so often. I think that you need a good process, a good set of requirements. Pricing can change from day to day, even for identical.
Right. Pricing does. And in the commercial world today with the internet, pricing does change day to day, literally.
Right.
Based on quantities, based on, you know, the
availability of items in the market. It
right.
can be
the company's
any number
goal
of things.
On, you know, if a company wants to, you know, price to get into a market it hasn't been in before, they'll make conscious decisions. There's all kinds of things that, you know, if you excess inventory, whatever, it makes all kinds of decision factors go into figuring it out. Just to keep this thought up, you know, there's been some talk that, you know, we're talking about expanding strategic sourcing and make it mandatory. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I'm kind of opposed to any mandatory programs. I don't know whether it's our nature or whatever, but as soon as you say mandatory, people start trying to get out of it. So I think that the best thing that you can do is set up a program that agencies see the value of, that you describe the value proposition, and you let agencies choose.
you want to create a framework that makes it, you know, a sound business decision to use a particular vehicle. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, to continue that thought, I think, you know, you didn't want to say it, but I think I read your mind, Carolyn. It goes back to when schedules were mandatory back in the 90s and even in the 80s.
Yeah.
There was a great deal of criticism of the program at that time because mandatory meant you had to use it. There wasn't a focus on improving the contracts because everybody knew mm-hmm. they had to be used, and there wasn't the dynamic sort of pricing because those prices were set at the time and they basically were in place for literally years at end. And that was because there wasn't the ability to lower pricing at any time. And the question, you know, to me, that mandatory requirement sort of that changed, schedules became optional, and they streamlined it and made it more competitive rather than less.
It did make the non-mandatory made the schedules more competitive because I think and I was in GSA at the time and I always thought that we were doing a terrific job of planning for the schedules when they were mandatory. But when they became mandatory, agencies could go other places. There was a real big change in mindset. I think that it
When it went non-mandatory.
I think that was a real boost to getting out and talking to customers, finding out what customers really wanted, trying to change the contracting programs in order to attract those customers to the vehicle.
Yeah. Well, Carolyn, we have to take a break right now, but when we return, we'll be talking more with Carolyn Austin, Executive Vice President and General Counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about GSA's value proposition, and then we'll turn to small business issues. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
In the ever-changing national security and IT environments, L3 delivers innovative, cost-effective solutions. As a Fortune 200 company, L3 offers customers global end-to-end services and solutions for large-scale systems. No matter the challenge, L3 has the agility, technology, and innovation required for mission performance. From cybersecurity to next-generation IT, L3's passion for its customers' missions drives its commitment to excellence. L3. Agility, innovation, performance.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we're talking to Carolyn Austin. Carolyn is the Executive Vice President and General Counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement. And Carolyn, we've been, we did a pretty deep dive into strategic sourcing as much as you can in 10 minutes. Yeah. All right. We could talk about it all day, I think, but we'd also bore everybody at a certain point, right? One of the things, though, I mean, I think GSA has a great opportunity here with its programs to actually, provide the government cost savings across the board for customer agencies. If it took a few steps, could you talk a little bit about, what you think those might be?
Okay. Let me start off by saying that I think that GSA has a huge value as a centralized acquisition agency. And I think that they have used their authority to establish some great programs, the GWACs and the schedules. I think every day provide agencies an opportunity to quickly and efficiently order, rather than go out on full and open contracting, a vast array of things from services to very complicated and highly technical products. I think that GSA would be well served by stating that value proposition often to the agency so that they know that those tools are there for them to use.
Like the credit card is another.
All
those things.
Mm-hmm. They have many, many good vehicles. And GSA, I know, does a huge amount of training in the federal sector. But the federal sector is so large and is constantly changing. If you took a list of contracting officers in Homeland Security today, tomorrow the list would change. So that the need for training is constant. So I know that that's a huge job in front of GSA, but I think they just have to keep at it because their programs are valuable and agencies need to know that they're there. Having said that, there are things that they could do to make the program easier to use. One of the issues that we hear all the time from our members is that I'm creating this huge solution for an agency. I have an HR system that has all kinds of tentacles on it. It has IT and it has consulting. And I need one little thing that's not on my contract to make this system work. And how do I get that? First of all, there are about 10 different answers to them. No 10 people will agree on what they are. And there is a tool that is in the GSA solicitation that I don't want to get overly technical, but it involves how do you buy other direct costs. It's a clause that allows agencies to buy items that they need to make these solutions work. And I would urge GSA to implement those provisions so that it will make the contracts easier for agencies to use.
Yeah, that operational issue of addressing how to acquire other direct mm-hmm. costs or material mm-hmm. at cost as part of a solution, that operational issue goes to issues of reducing contract duplication, which would save, because if that solution could be provided under the schedules, for example, agencies wouldn't necessarily be more inclined to create their own contract vehicles, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it seems like a small issue, but it has such a huge impact. Because customers that go to the schedules to buy a solution and they can't find it, instead of trying to figure out the many different ways that they might be able to use to buy these other direct cost and materials, they will go out and solicit full and open contracts on their own. And that I think that's a tremendous loss to the agencies. But it's a tremendous loss to us as taxpayers because we have the government using money in a budget environment where funds are really scarce to do something that's unnecessary.
Right. They could place a task order in a lot less time, if that mm-hmm. flexibility was provided
right.
at that point. And so it sort of gets to another issue that I wanted to talk a little bit about before we go to small businesses, but that's contract duplication and the mm-hmm. issues there and the challenges. And it's something that, we hear all the time that, there's the creation of multiple contract vehicles for the same or similar services. And, the companies, believe I've got to play in a contract vehicle because I can't afford to be potentially locked out of market where mm-hmm. I think there's a great opportunity for GSA in its central role in the procurement, in the procurement system to help, sort of reduce that contract duplication. Again, there's an opportunity from our perspective, and I'm going to introduce a new thought to us here, or a new concept that GSA, that the Coalition for Government Procurement is going to be talking about, that is strategic acquisition. And what that is and what does that mean? And strategic acquisition as opposed to strategic sourcing, we're looking at how do we right size the number of contract vehicles across government? What's the right number? What's the right makeup? And how do we, best use those contract vehicles that we do have in place? So you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that truly strategic sourcing should be strategic acquisition because the way strategic sourcing has developed in the government, the focus has been so much on the price. And really, in order to have a good, valuable acquisition, you need to focus on more than price. It needs to be a focus on what the requirements actually are. And also just the terms. How are you buying it? Are you buying it in a way that costs your business partners money? Or cost yourself money to put it in place,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. Well, I think anytime you cost your business partners money, you're costing yourself money because it's going to be passed on. So you need to look at, the government needs to look at, and industry needs to look at how things are being acquired, how they're being offered into the federal market.
Well, do you think there's an issue that where, actually agencies, when they actually do use these vehicles to go to strategic acquisition, they're making it more complicated than it really needs to be in terms of the task order competitions?
Well,
whether it's a schedule or a GWAC or a MAC or whatever.
Yeah, and I'll tell you something. We, The original concept for ordering off a schedule and ordering off of any of the IDIQ contracts was to keep it simple so that agencies could get it was, you know, the time to market, the time to delivery would be reduced. But what has happened is that agencies tend to build those task and delivery order requirements like they would a FAR Part 15 negotiated contract, so much so that there are even cases at the GAO where, you know, GAO will say, if you make it sound like a FAR Part 15, we're going to make you stick to it. So I think agencies can take an opportunity to streamline the processes that they're using to order off of all task order contracts.
Well, I think, yeah, we've sort of gone full circle, haven't we? When you know, flexibilities were introduced in, you know, the 1990s in particular, after 1996, from 96 to 2000, mm-hmm. you know, when we streamlined and made these things, you know, people were actually taking, they were still conducting competitions, but they were much more focused, much more straightforward, simpler. And then I think, you know, you had a couple of big protests, people start becoming more risk averse, mm-hmm. and we've sort of stopped rewarding that taking a risk or looking at ways to make it more efficient and layering on process where the goal again becomes, and this criticism goes back to before 1996, is, yeah, you if you comply with the process, that's considered success rather than what you're buying. And I think there's some of that has been built back in the system again.
Yeah, but the irony is that the more process you build, actually the more risk you impose for yourself, because the more rules you have, the easier they are to break. And I think that's what you see a lot of times in those GAO cases that say, if it looks like FAR Part 15, you know, that's the way we're going to evaluate it.
Well, Carolyn, you know what? We went through that. We blew through that 10-minute session, and we didn't get to talk about small business yet. Oh. So I guess we'll do it in our last segment. But Okay. Right now we do have to take a break. My guest today is Carolyn Alston, Executive Vice President and General Counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement. And you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today my guest is Carolyn Alston. Carolyn is Executive Vice President and General Counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement. And one of the things Carolyn is going to be heading up as part of the coalition is our new small business committee. And Carolyn, there's been a lot of focus on small businesses, both on the in the executive branch and on the Hill this year, this past year. In the schedules environment, can you talk about some of the recent developments with regard to small business in particular?
Certainly. You know, I think one thing about the whole area of small business utilization is that it's one area where we probably have pretty uniform agreement that there should be robust utilization of small businesses in the federal market. And the coalition's creation of a new small business committee is kind of a reflection of that. So we read with interest the proposed rule that the Small Business Administration issued a couple of months ago now. I think it was back in May they issued, and comments were due sometime in July. What the rule says is that there is, it gives discretion to federal agencies to have set aside of orders under the multiple award schedule. Now, there was always a process under the multiple award schedule that allowed agencies to give a preference to small business, but it was not called a set aside. So now that the old authority still exists, and now there is a discretionary authority for set asides. And I might say the GSA has already, in advance of the small business rule, implemented the authority to set aside orders. And all of this, all of these, both the SBA rule and the FAR rule are implementations of the Small Business Jobs Act.
Okay, Small Business Jobs Act of mm-hmm. 2010.
Right.
So what do you, what's your take on the rule? I'd love to hear it. Or our audience would love to hear it. I already know it.
I felt that the rule was very complicated, number one. What has happened is there's a set of rules in the Small Business guidance, and there's a set of rules in the FAR. So just in terms of someone who wants to understand what the rules are, you have to look in two places. So I think that makes it a complication already. The other issue that we have for our small business members is that the current schedule already has a very high percentage of small businesses getting sales. I think the goals, small businesses generally accomplish about 30% of the revenue on schedules, whereas government-wide, sometimes the government struggles to even make the 23% goal. The small business rule will impose on the schedule some of the eligibility requirements that until now were only applicable for formal set-asides. And there are two that are of concern to our members. One is the non-manufacturing rule, which means that if you are small, you have to offer the product of a small manufacturer. That will greatly impact some of the resellers on the GSA schedule who meet the small business side standards, but on different requirements might offer the product of a large manufacturer. Okay, the second rule that is of some concern is the limitation on subcontracting. We have on the schedule, there are sometimes very large requirements, and a small business will be a part of that requirement and get a preference under some of the current rules. They would not necessarily be eligible as small business size under the new small business rule because they perform less than 50% of the requirement. So we are really concerned that the unintended consequence of the small business rule might be to kick some of these companies that are now considered small out of the competition. And, you know, we were hoping that the Small Business Administration, and we still hope that through the comment period, the Small Business Administration will look at some of the commercial practices and try to, for the schedules orders, to bring in some commercial best practices into how and when you consider a small company as actually small.
So, you know, on the other, you know, just taking, you know, the other side, what is so wrong with, you know, if it's a small business set aside, has to be the product of a small business manufacturer? Is it a reflection of the marketplace, or what is the concern?
Well, and to some extent, it is a reflection of the marketplace because we have a lot of small business resellers and dealers. There are not so many manufacturers. In some industries, there are very, very few small business manufacturers. So, as I said before, if you use that rule, a number of companies that are considered small commercially and that have always been considered small on the schedule could be eliminated from competition. But I think one of the other problems, Roger, is that there's going to be so much confusion on the part of federal contracting officers on which rules actually apply. And my concern is that some of the contracting activities may not immediately recognize that what they're doing is excluding some of their value supplier from competition.
Right. And well, I guess my question is, or when you stop and think about it, is it in some ways more restrictive than the normal set aside rules? Because like the limitation on subcontracting, if I recall, and I could be wrong, and maybe they change the rule, you will correct me if I'm wrong, is that when you set aside a contract, it was 50% of the work under the contract had to be set aside. You know, there might be multiple task orders issued, and one task order could have, you know, a higher level or a lower level of subcontracting by a large business, but ultimately the overall contract. Was that the way it worked? Or?
No, actually, the rule on the schedule will be applied by order.
Right. That's the difference I'm trying to identify.
That will be applied by order. So what will happen is that you could have a small business that if they were going to be eligible, might over the course of over the entire contract have a pretty high percentage of participation. But if you look at the one order, their participation might be really low, and they would be eliminated from competition on that particular order, which also goes to, is that the best thing for an agency that's looking at a total solution under the GSA schedule? And many agencies now are going to the schedule for total solutions, not for individual orders.
All right. Well, do you think so? It sounds like you think there might be an opportunity there for the SBA to look at, potentially use this as an opportunity to try something different or new to support small business instead of the same approach.
I think that that opportunity is there. I think obviously the Small Business Administration is looking to help small businesses, not hurt them. And they have solicited public comment, and I'm hoping that during the public comment period, we might see either some changes to the rules or at least discussion of how the government will accommodate some of the concerns that I've been discussing.
Or maybe they could do varying flavors of set aside or something, like versus partial versus saying a contract. Because the other aspect of it is teaming agreements under schedules. And I think GSA's guidance is that if you set something aside, every member of the team has to be small, right?
Yes, they do. And GSA has put a lot of instructions up for on their website for customer agencies to use. But teaming is an area that I consider one of those areas that helps agencies to address the ODC issue that we were talking about, because if you can't handle a requirement yourself, then you can team with somebody else who can bring in niche markets. But the rule, if a small business is not able to team with any company that's not also small, that limits their ability to offer a total solution to the government.
Yeah. Well, I think there's an opportunity there to actually, I think further enhance small business mm-hmm. participation, trying some innovative approaches, but we'll have to wait and see. Carolyn, unfortunately we've run out of time today. It's always great conversation, talking about key policy issues, and geez, we didn't even get to cover everything we wanted to. So I'll have to have you come back.
I'll
have to invite you back sometime soon. So I want to thank my guest, Carolyn Alston, Executive Vice President and General Counsel of the Coalition for Government Procurement, and you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition of Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30 only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.